Imagine for a second, right, that you've just been handed this medical file.
Okay.
But it's not your standard, you know, thin manila folder. It is a 6,000-page document. And it's completely written in a foreign language.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
Right. And your life, or like the life of someone you really love, depends on understanding exactly what it says right this very second.
It's an incredibly overwhelming scenario. But honestly, if you were to print out the raw data from a modern oncology workup,
yeah,
that is a very literal representation of what you'd be staring at. I mean, the sheer volume of information is just paralyzing.
Well, welcome to this deep dive.
Right.
Because today our mission is to shortcut that intensely complex world of precision medicine.
A great topic.
We've got our hands on some fascinating source material detailing this platform called DNAi. And what this platform does is take all that raw, chaotic molecular and imaging data from a patient.
Right.
And instead of just translating it into some dense medical report, it actually builds a living digital clone of a tumor.
A literal digital twin.
Exactly. A digital twin that lets doctors test aggressive treatments on a microchip, you know, before they ever touch the actual patient.
Which completely changes the paradigm, right? I mean, the era of trial and error in cancer treatment is, well, it's ending.
Yeah.
We're looking at how this system enables clinicians to ask what if before making irreversible treatment decisions, which is something human biology has, you know, never really allowed us to do before.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the core problem highlighted in our source is how we even talk about the disease in the first place.
Absolutely.
When we hear a diagnosis like breast cancer or glioblastoma, we tend to treat it like a single definitive thing.
Hmm.
But those are really just umbrella terms.
Yeah, that's such an important distinction. Two patients can sit in the exact same waiting room with the exact same diagnosis on their charts, and their tumors might have fundamentally different biology.
Right.
One might be driven by a specific hormone, another by like an aggressive genetic mutation. They're growing at vastly different rates.
And crucially, they'll respond to completely different therapies.
Exactly. Every single tumor is a unique, evolving system.
So if you want to build a digital simulation of a totally unique system, you need the raw materials, right? You need the data.
You need a lot of data.
But the raw material of cancer biology is incredibly messy. The source says, when a modern sequencing lab profiles a patient's tumor, they're generating an avalanche of about 6,000 individual measurements.
Yes, across four distinct biological categories.
Yeah, let's break those down.
Yeah.
Because it's not just a giant list of random numbers.
No, it's very specific. So first, the sequencing looks at gene expression, which you can think of as checking which genes are turned on and how loud the volume is turned up on them.
Right.
Then it looks for physical DNA mutations. So literally searching for which genes have their internal code physically broken.
And the source also mentions copy number variation.
Yeah.
Which is like looking at the structural level to see if a gene has been mistakenly duplicated a dozen times or just entirely deleted from the genome.
Exactly. And the final category is methylation.
Oh, this one is fascinating.
Right. It tells us which genes have been chemically silenced. So they aren't physically broken. The body has just securely locked them away and turned them off.
Okay. So you end up with 6,000 of these highly specific measurements. But mathematically speaking, the source notes this is entirely too high dimension.
Way too high. Not just for a human doctor to synthesize in their head while sitting across from a patient.
I mean, obviously.
But actually, it's too noisy for most artificial intelligence systems to handle, too. If you feed 6,000 chaotic data points into a standard predictive model, the signal simply gets lost in the noise.
So the system has to compress the biology.
Right.
The source refers to this compression engine as a, let me make sure I get this right, a hierarchical Bayesian VAE.
Which sounds incredibly intimidating.
It really does. But functionally, it's a foundational AI model, kind of similar to what powers modern generative AI. But instead of being trained on, you know, the entire internet, it was trained on the biological data of over 9,000 patients across 33 different types of cancer.
That's a massive data set.
It is. And it takes those 6,000 noisy measurements and distills them down into a biological fingerprint made of exactly 328 numbers.
What's fascinating here is that these aren't just arbitrary black box numbers.
Right.
In a lot of AI models, when you compress data, the resulting dimensions are just mathematical abstractions, hidden layers that no human could ever interpret.
Yeah, just a soup of data.
Exactly. But in this platform, each of those 328 numbers has a specific hard-coded biological meaning.
The breakdown in the text is incredibly rigid.
Yeah.
Out of the 328 numbers, one single dimension captures the growth rate of the tumor.
Just one.
Yeah, and that one number has a 0.96 correlation with standard physical proliferation markers you'd actually see under a microscope.
Which is astounding accuracy.
Then, 200 numbers are dedicated to encoding activity across 50 known cancer pathways.
Right. Allocating exactly four dimensions to capture things like inflammation or DNA repair or immune response.
And the remaining numbers are just as specific. It allocates 48 dimensions to capture the epigenetic patterns.
Which is that chemical silencing we mentioned earlier.
Right. Another 32 dimensions encode chromosomal instability.
Yep.
And whatever tiny fraction is left over acts as a catch-all to capture residual biological signals that just don't fit perfectly into those known categories.
Think about the scale of that reduction.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It is like taking that incredibly chaotic 6,000-page disorganized dossier we talked about at the very start and violently editing it down into a 328-word, perfectly structured summary.
That's a perfect analogy.
And every single word in that summary has a strict mathematical definition.
And the mathematical elegance of this is how it organizes these fingerprints. Two patients might have entirely different superficial mutations, right? Like different broken genes on paper. But if the underlying engine of their disease is the same, say, the exact same inflammation pathways are driving the growth, their mathematical fingerprints will end up clustered right next to each other in the AI's virtual space.
Oh, wow. So the system recognizes they're fundamentally fighting the same kind of fire, even if the matches that started it look completely different.
Precisely.
But, I mean, that makes perfect sense if you have all the data. Let's be real about the modern medical system, though.
Right. It's not always perfect.
What if a smaller regional hospital doesn't have the budget to run all four types of sequencing? Like, what if they only ran RNA testing?
That's a very real problem. And the platform uses something called a product of experts fusion architecture to handle exactly that scenario.
Product of experts.
Yeah. Think of it like a panel of medical specialists. If the MRI specialist gets a flat tire and misses the meeting, the rest of the doctors don't just throw their hands up and cancel the diagnosis.
Right. They work with what they have.
Exactly. The AI gracefully handles the missing data. It still produces a reliable fingerprint based on the tests it actually does have. It just outputs that fingerprint with appropriately wider uncertainty bounds.
So it explicitly knows what it doesn't know.
Yes. It's honest about its blind spots.
All right. So we have this 328-number fingerprint. We have a pristine mathematical representation of what is happening inside the cells.
We do.
But numbers on a spreadsheet don't show you the physical battlefield. I mean, they don't show you what the tumor actually looks like in physical space.
Yeah.
You have to add eyes to the math.
You really do, because sequencing data alone can't show you if the patient's immune cells are successfully infiltrating the outer wall of the tumor.
Right.
Or if the cancer is physically invading a nearby blood vessel. To see the physical architecture, you absolutely need pathology slides and radiology scans, like MRIs.
And the source explains that the platform combines this physical imaging with the molecular numbers using a technique called late-gated fusion.
Yeah, late-gated fusion. So a lot of AI systems try to mash the images and the numbers together right at the beginning of the process.
Which seems like a bad idea.
It is, because it degrades both signals. They muddy the waters. Late-gated fusion essentially means the platform processes the high-resolution images with a specialist vision model.
Okay.
It processes the molecular numbers with a specialist math model, and then a learned gate, kind of like a master conductor, decides how much to trust each source.
And it makes that decision based on the specific cancer type.
Exactly.
You know, like, if the cancer is a type where physical cell structure is a massive indicator of how aggressive it is, the gate gives the images way more weight.
Right.
But if the molecular signal is clearly driving the bus, the gate suppresses the imaging automatically so it doesn't distract the system.
It's remarkably intuitive.
I do have to push back on the imaging aspect, though, because something in the source text really caught my eye, and it feels like a massive flaw.
Oh, what's that?
It mentions that the AI's vision models accidentally encode the specific scanner brand and staining protocols used by the hospital.
Ah, yes.
Wait, so the AI might get totally confused and give a wrong prediction just because a hospital used, like, a Siemens scanner instead of GE?
Yeah.
Or a slightly different color dye on the slide?
You've hit on one of the biggest, most dangerous hurdles in medical AI right now.
Really?
Yes. High-resolution slides absolutely pick up the subtle digital signature of the specific scanner lens or the specific chemical wash used in that localized lab. It's a massive source of bias.
That sounds incredibly dangerous for a patient whose data is being processed.
It would be. But the developers of the DNAi platform openly acknowledge that cross-institution transfer of imaging is deeply unreliable.
Oh, no, they do.
Well, because of that bias, their production system automatically suppresses all imaging data from unvalidated sites by default.
Wow.
It acts as a hard failsafe. It only turns the imaging analysis on after that specific hospital scanners and dyes have passed a rigorous per-site validation process.
To prove the AI isn't being tricked by the equipment.
Exactly.
It defaults to safety. If it hasn't tested your hospital's cameras, it closes its eyes and just relies on the molecular math.
Yes.
I actually really appreciate that level of caution. So we now have the full picture, the molecular fingerprint and the validated physical imaging.
Right.
What does the AI actually do with this digital clone once it's built?
This is where the platform diverges into two parallel paths. The first is the static path. It focuses entirely on the immediate present, answering one core question. What is driving this cancer right now, today?
And to figure this out, it uses a graph neural network. The text calls it causal driver gate.
Right.
Which, if you want to visualize this, think of a massive social network map. But instead of people, it's a map of biological interactions.
That's a great way to put it.
Showing which proteins regulate which other proteins in the human body.
Yeah.
It takes the patient's unique fingerprint and overlays it onto this vast biological social network.
And its job is to look at every single mutated gene and make a critical judgment call. Is this mutation a true driver that has its hands on the steering wheel, actively pushing the cancer forward?
Or is it just a passenger?
Exactly. Is it an innocent passenger mutation that happened to get broken along the way but isn't actually contributing to the disease?
The source notes it achieves 93.3% accuracy in distinguishing the drivers from the passengers.
Which is phenomenal.
And once it isolates the drivers, it categorizes them, right?
Yeah.
Like, is this driver targetable with an existing drug? Is it actively causing resistance to a drug? Or is it currently undruggable?
Yes. And those rankings feed directly into a module called TX Response.
TX Response.
Right, which evaluates 50 highly interpretable biological pathways to predict exactly how sensitive the tumor will be to various classes of drugs.
So what does this all mean for you if you're the one sitting in that doctor's office?
Right, what's the practical application?
It means your doctor isn't just looking at a screen that flashes a magic unexplained output saying, treat patient with drug X.
Exactly. The entire system is designed as the antithesis of a black box.
Thank goodness.
Right. If the AI recommends a certain chemotherapy, it simultaneously shows the clinician exactly which biological pathways are mediating that sensitivity.
So it provides its own biological receipts.
Yes. The clinician can use their own years of medical training to verify if the recommendation makes biological sense, rather than just blindly trusting that it makes statistical sense to a computer algorithm.
Knowing what is happening right now is critical, obviously. But cancer is not static.
No, it is constantly changing.
It evolves. It mutates. Which brings us to the second parallel path of the platform, the dynamic path.
Huh.
Or, as I like to think of it, the tumor time machine.
I love that phrase, the tumor time machine.
Because this path tackles the infinitely harder question, what happens next?
To forecast the future, the platform uses a hyper network to generate personalized physics parameters for the patient. It calculates the granular details, like how fast different distinct subpopulations of cells within the tumor are growing, how sensitive each subgroup is to drugs, and how effectively the patient's own immune system is fighting back.
And the source points out a vital detail here. These aren't just arbitrary constraints learned by an AI looking at data. They are hard physics limits enforced in the fundamental architecture of the software.
Which is key.
For example, a tumor's growth rate literally cannot be calculated as a negative number.
Right.
And drug sensitivity is strictly bounded between 0 and 100%.
Biology has to obey the laws of physics, and so does the simulation. Once those guardrails are set, the parameters feed into a neural ordinary differential equation solver.
Okay, ordinary differential equation solver. That is a heavy piece of terminology.
It is a mouthful. But conceptually, differential equations are just the mathematics of how things change over time.
Okay.
Exactly that. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's using the exact same mathematics that ecologists use to model predator-prey dynamics in a forest. Oh, like wolves and deer.
Exactly. If you introduce wolves, how fast does the deer population drop? And how quickly does the grass grow back? But here, instead of wolves and deer, it's calculating the precise rates of change between a toxic chemotherapy drug and a mutating mass of cancer cells.
Wow. So it calculates when the tumor will shrink, when a tiny fraction of cells might, develop resistance,
Yeah.
and how quickly that new resistant subpopulation will outcompete the dying cells.
And it runs these calculations incredibly fast. It has an emulator that processes a full trajectory in 5 milliseconds.
5 milliseconds.
A doctor can literally sit there and run thousands of different what-if treatment schedules in real time.
But deterministic math isn't enough, right? Because cancer always has an element of biological
It
randomness.
does. It's chaotic. And
Yeah.
to account for that, they layer a stochastic evolution simulator on top of the physics.
Stochastic just meaning random, right?
Yes. This injects the random chance events, a sudden new mutation, or the spontaneous emergence of a resistant clone. Think of it like a hyper-personalized weather forecast for your biology.
Oh, that's good.
But instead of a generic 30% chance of rain on Tuesday, the AI generates a phylogenetic tree. It shows you exactly how tumor subpopulation A might outcompete subpopulation B over the next 6 months if you use a specific drug on a specific schedule.
Yeah.
It gives you a range of possible futures with actual calculated confidence intervals.
And fusing that rigorous deterministic physics with unpredictable stochastic randomness is genuinely the only way to accurately capture how cancer behaves in the real world.
There is a catch, though.
There's always a catch.
To make these future predictions accurate, the AI needs to be trained on vast amounts of data regarding how tumors react to thousands of different drugs.
Right.
And we simply don't have enough human data mapping out every possible drug reaction. So researchers rely heavily on mice,
We do.
which creates a massive hurdle that the text calls the mouse translation problem.
Right. In preclinical research, the gold standard is the patient-derived xenograft.
Xenograft. Okay.
Yeah. You take a piece of a human tumor and surgically grow it inside a mouse to test experimental drugs on it. The problem, computationally speaking, is that the mouse's own biology contaminates the data signal.
How so?
Well, the mouse's hormones, its immune system, its metabolism, it all gets mixed into the molecular sequencing.
So the mouse gets in the way of the math.
Exactly. But the platform engineers build a fascinating solution. They call it a domain separation network.
And the best way to understand this is to think of it like a pair of high-end noise-canceling headphones.
That's spot on. The AI identifies the specific frequency or biological signature of the mouse tissue, and then it generates an inverse signal to cancel those artifacts out entirely.
Leaving only the pure, uncontaminated audio or data of the human tumor.
Yes. And it even goes a step further by statistically filling in missing data types, like those complex methylation patterns we talked about earlier.
Right, because those aren't typically measured in standard mouse experiments.
Exactly. It learns the statistical relationships between what is measured and what is missing, and it literally reconstructs the gap.
Which is just a monumental bridge in medical research. It means we can take drug responses observed in a laboratory mouse and directly, mathematically translate them to inform predictions for a human patient lying in a hospital bed.
It's incredible.
Okay, we are in the home stretch of the pipeline now. We
Yeah.
have mapped the present, we have simulated the future, we've noise canceled the preclinical data.
We've done a lot.
The final layer of the platform is where the AI actually helps the doctor design an attack plan.
The treatment design layer. This takes everything the digital twin has learned and applies it across four distinct strategies.
Okay, let's go through them.
The first is straightforward treatment optimization. The module combines survival modeling with data from 295 different compounds that were tested across hundreds of cell lines.
And it uses something called Pareto optimization, which is essentially a mathematical balancing act.
Right.
It looks for the absolute perfect ridge between maximizing the death of the tumor while minimizing the toxic poisoning of the patient, all while calculating the risk of long-term resistance.
And it plans three moves ahead, anticipating how resistance to the first drug will naturally change the tumor's vulnerability to the second drug.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Yeah.
The source explicitly states that this specific optimization module is currently operating in shadow mode.
Shadow mode, yes.
Like it's running silently in the background alongside standard care to validate its own accuracy,
Yeah.
but it is actively restricted from driving real patient decisions right now.
And do you know why?
Because an expert panel determined that some of the complex parameters just don't have enough real-world data to be perfectly identified yet.
Right, and that is a profound level of scientific integrity.
It really is.
Critical thinking in AI design means knowing when not to act, building a vital safety mechanism that says, hey, I need more data before I make a life or death recommendation.
I just have so much admiration for an AI built with humility.
Yeah, you don't see that often.
So moving to the next strategy in the design layer, synthetic lethality.
Sounds like a sci-fi weapon.
It really does. But the mechanism is fascinating. It's about finding druggable vulnerabilities created by the tumor's own mutations.
Right. Sometimes, in its chaotic rush to mutate and grow, a cancer cell will accidentally break a gene that it actually needed.
Oops.
Yeah, big mistake. To survive that loss of function, it becomes entirely dependent on a backup gene. It basically creates its own Achilles heel.
And the AI engine integrates data from massive gene editing screens and maps 28 validated pairs of these genes.
Exactly. It scans the tumor, finds the broken primary gene, and tells the doctor exactly which drug will destroy the backup generator, killing the cancer cell instantly.
The third strategy focuses on immunogenic variant prioritization.
Yes, immunotherapy.
Immunotherapy is a massive buzzword right now, but it doesn't work for everyone.
It definitely doesn't.
The AI evaluates the tumor's microenvironment to see if it is immune hot, warm, or cold. Meaning, is the patient's immune system already swarming the tumor trying to fight it, or is it completely ignoring the mass?
The AI dives incredibly deep here. It ranks mutations based on how likely they are to trigger an immune alarm.
Okay, give me an example.
For instance, it knows that a frameshift mutation, which essentially scrambles an entire sequence of DNA, so it produces gibberish proteins well, that looks incredibly foreign and alarming to the immune system.
Much more so than just a simple single-point mutation.
Exactly.
But again, here's that built-in humility. The text notes that this module critically abstains from recommending immunotherapy for immunologically cold tumors.
Yes.
It mathematically knows the treatment is unlikely to succeed, so it refuses to offer false hope.
Which is so important.
It saves the patient from undergoing rigorous, exhausting, and expensive treatments that have a near zero chance of working for their specific biology.
And the final strategy is methylation decoding.
Which circles all the way back to that epigenetic landscape we discussed at the very beginning.
Right. It specifically screens 19 known tumor suppressor genes, which are the natural biological brakes that stop cancer from growing.
Like the MGMT gene in brain tumors or BRCA1.
Exactly. It looks for suppressors that haven't been mutated or broken, but have simply been chemically silenced by the cancer.
And if the gene isn't broken, just sleeping, doctors actually have specific epigenetic drugs that can wake it back up.
Yes, they can chemically strip away the silencing and restore the body's natural defenses. The platform pinpoints exactly when that is a viable option.
Looking at this entire pipeline, what emerges is not just a digital twin functioning as some flashy Silicon Valley marketing metaphor.
No, it's very real.
It is a fully inspectable, living simulation. From those 328 latent dimensions to physiological growth units to time-resolved trajectories with calibrated uncertainty.
Nothing in this system is hidden in a black box.
When it makes a recommendation, it shows the biological mechanism.
It shows the confidence level.
And it knows exactly when to abstain rather than guess.
It truly shifts the burden of trial and error away from the human body and places it squarely onto the microchip.
In a world of absolute information overload, this source proves that the future of medicine isn't just about collecting more sequencing data.
Not at all.
It's about compressing that data beautifully. It's about allowing doctors to test their what-ifs using cheap computational cycles instead of experimenting with a patient's precious time and health.
That's exactly right.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. If this kind of rigorous mathematical logic, these 328 dimensions and predator-prey physics simulators, can successfully map the trajectory of a chaotic, mutating, wildly unpredictable cancer.
Yeah.
What happens when we apply this exact same digital twin logic to our healthy organs?
Oh, wow.
Could we soon simulate the future trajectory of our own baseline biology and map out an intervention to stop a disease years before the very first physical symptom ever appears?
Now that is a fascinating question.
It's something to think about. Keep questioning, keep exploring, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.